In this weekend's HBO telemovie Temple Grandin, actress Claire Danes plays the title role. Terry Gross spoke most recently with the real Temple Grandin last year about her latest book, Animals Make Us Human, Creating the Best Life for Animals. Her previous books include the memoir Thinking in Pictures and the bestseller Animals in Translation.
What are some of the typical, like, animal repetitive behaviors that are a sign that something's wrong? Like, we've all known dogs who chase their tail endlessly. Would that be an example?
That would be an example of pacing in a lion or a polar bear, a tongue rolling. Recently, I saw some Jersey cows putting their heads up in the air and just waggling their tongues all around. That's totally abnormal. A gerbil that just sits in the corner digging and digging and digging constantly. That's abnormal. The main thing about a stereotypy is exactly the same over and over and over again. An animal that's pacing will, you know, wear down the floor right where he paces.
So do you feel like you have any insights about how to break animals of that kind of, you know, like repetitive compulsive behavior?
Well, you got to start looking at what is that animal do in the wild. You take the polar bear, he's a nomad animal. He walks for miles and miles and miles and miles. Grazing animals like cattle tend to get mouth stereotypies because what do they do all day? They eat. Gerbils will get into digging stereotypies. But what gets interesting is looking at the motivation. The polar bear he's seeking stuff to do. That's why he walks and walks and walks. Now the gerbil, they thought, okay, let's make a good environment for a gerbil. Let's just give him more sand to dig in. Well, he still spends all 30% of his day digging and digging and digging. You know, but what the gerbil really wants is a place to hide because this is a prey species animal. And he's trying to dig a hole in the bottom of the aquarium, and he can't make a tunnel. Well, if you give him a tunnel, even a fake one, he'll go in there. That gives him cover. And he's digging because he feels exposed. You know, that stereotypy was motivated by fear, where the stereotypy in the polar bear was motivated by seeking.
Seeking is when you're hunting for something, looking for something, and you have anticipation that when you find it, it's going to be really good, and therefore you even get pleasure in the hunting part, in the seeking part, because of that sense of anticipation.
Well, that's right. It's, you know, it's the anticipation more than, it's thinking about, you know, having a chocolate sundae more than they actually having it.
So once you know what you think might be behind the repetitive behavior in the animal, how do you break it?
Well, you've got one of the things that was done with Gus, the polar bear, is you had to give him things to do. Okay, the problem is it's an animal that walks for miles and miles and miles and miles. I mean, you can't do that at the Central Park Zoo. So what they did was they gave him lots of barrels that he could jump on with all different buoyancies. And every time he jumped on these barrels in the water, they would float up at different buoyancies. And that cut down on the stereotypies. But the emphasis has to be on preventing the behavior in the first place, because the problem with stereotypic behavior is it can get entrenched into the brain and be difficult to get rid of.
You've written about how, because you do have autism, you don't really like physical contact with people. You've chosen to avoid romantic love in your life. You choose to live alone. What about physical contact with animals? Do you enjoy petting them? Do you enjoy things like a cat sitting in your lap and snuggling up against you?
Yes, and I really enjoy stroking an animal. And you don't want to pat an animal. You want to stroke it, kind of just firm strokes like mother's tongue. You know, cattle, sometimes you rub them on the neck just right. They put their head up in the air, and they kind of go, oh, that just feels so good. I do get pleasure out of stroking an animal and seeing that animal get happy when you do it.
What else gives you pleasure beyond work?
Talking about autism with other people, talking about animals with other people, talking about engineering with other people, talking about really interesting stuff. And I can relate to another lady that's got Asperger's. She was giving a talk, and she was telling me that, she and her husband have this great romantic dinners and really nice restaurant with candles and everything else. And that sets the stage for a beautiful romantic conversation on computer data storage systems.
I love it.
Because it's just so interesting. And I can completely relate to that.
Now, how does your body and how does your nervous system respond to physical pain? Even the ordinary aches and pains of aging, does that send you into panic, or are you okay at coping with that?
No, I've got quite a bit of back pain, and I'm coping with that.
So that doesn't frighten you. You can handle that.
Yeah, I can handle the pain. In fact, when I had a major surgery, the nurse told me that I used very little pain medication compared to some of the other patients.
Now, why do you think that is? Like, so many people can't deal with pain. Like, pain is very upsetting. Pain hurts. And you seem to cope with pain fine. And yet, you know, somebody's car beeping is going to send you into panic if you're not on medication.
Well, that's a common thing with a lot of people, you know, with autism. They're more pain tolerant.
Really? Has anybody investigated why?
That's something that probably needs to be investigated. One of the things that really needs to be investigated in autism are the sensory sensitivity problems. And they're very variable, from mild nuisances to being totally debilitating. There are some people on the spectrum, in fact, smart Asperger people on the spectrum, that can't tolerate a normal office because they can see the flicker, the 60-cycle flicker of fluorescent lights. They feel like they're in a disco. They can't tolerate just the noise of, you know, office equipment, things like that, because it hurts their ears. And these sensory problems are now just starting to get researched. I mean, I've been a big proponent of saying to researchers, please, you've got to study these problems. They are just so debilitating. You know, how can a person socialize or live a normal life if every little phone ringing or something hurts their ears?
Right. You recently wrote a book that's about social skills and teaching social skills to people. Do you feel like you had to be taught social skills, that you didn't have any intuitive understanding of them, that you had to be shown what the rules are?
I had to just be taught. This is where my 50s upbringing, I think, really helped me. All kids back in the 50s were taught to say please and thank you. They were taught table manners. My parents and my nanny spent hours playing turn-taking games, you know, little board games, Chinese checkers, parcheesi, things like this, to teach turn-taking, because I have to learn social skills like acting in a play. Now, the thing is, there's differences in how many social circuits are hooked up. It's going to be very, very variable.
You've said that when you first started working, that because you really didn't understand certain social skills, you would dress in a very kind of unkempt way. Your personal hygiene wasn't the greatest until you were told that this had to change. So when you were told and you changed, were you insulted? You know, most people, if you say to them, "Wow, you're dressing unkempt," or you have. You have bad personal hygiene, they'd be really offended. But does that kind of personal offense register on you? Do you take
it that
way?
Oh, no, yeah, I did. I was absolutely furious. But I did it because I wanted to keep the job. Now, I still dress kind of eccentric. And I think eccentric's fine. But a filthy, dirty slob, that's not fine. In fact, I've gotten after some other people on the spectrum for showing up at an important meeting, you know, with a dirty T-shirt and told them to go up to their room and get a different shirt. You know, but on the other hand, you can't totally de-geek the geek, and don't even try. You can't make me into something that I'm not. It's sort of like you've got to meet halfway.
Well, Temple Grandin, I really want to thank you for talking with us and coming to Fresh Air again. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Temple Grandin speaking with Terry Gross in 2009. A new telemovie based on her life, titled Temple Grandin and starring Claire Danes, premieres this weekend on HBO.